Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga, continuing with Part 2, Chapter 4, Concentration, page 321. This concentration proceeds by the idea, using thought, form, and name as keys, which yield up to the concentrating mind the truth that lies concealed behind all thought, form, and name. For it is through the idea that the mental being arises beyond all expression to that which is expressed, to that of which the idea itself is only the instrument. By concentration upon the idea, the mental existence, which at present we are, breaks open the barrier of our mentality and arrives at the state of consciousness, the state of being, the state of power of conscious being and bliss of conscious being, to which the idea corresponds and of which it is the symbol, movement, and rhythm. Concentration by the idea is, then, only a means, a key, to open to us the superconscient planes of our existence, a certain self-gathered state of our whole existence lifted into that superconscient truth, unity, and infinity of self-aware, self-blissful existence is the aim and culmination. And that is the meaning we shall give to the term samadhi. Not merely a state withdrawn from all consciousness of the outward, withdrawn even from all consciousness of the inward into that which exists beyond both, whether as seed of both or transcendent even of their seed state, but a settled existence in the one and infinite, united and identified with it. And this status to remain, whether we abide in the waking condition in which we are conscious of the forms of things, or we withdraw into the inward activity, which dwells in the play of the principles of things, the play of their names and typal forms, or we soar to the condition of static inwardness, where we arrive at the principles themselves and at the principle of all principles, the seed of name and form, the waking, dream, and sleep states of the soul. For the soul that has arrived at the essential samadhi and is settled in it, samadhistha, in the sense the Gita attaches to the word, has that which is fundamental to all experience and cannot fall from it by any experience, however distracting to one who has not yet ascended the summit. It can embrace all in the scope of its being, without being bound by any, or deluded, or limited. When we arrive at this state, all our being and consciousness being concentrated, the necessity of concentration in the idea ceases. For there, in that supramental state, the whole position of things is reversed. The mind is a thing that dwells in diffusion, in succession. It can only concentrate on one thing at a time, and when not concentrated, runs from one thing to another very much at random. Therefore, it has to concentrate on a single idea, a single subject of meditation, a single object of contemplation, a single object of will, in order to possess or master it. And this it must do to at least the temporary exclusion of all others. But that which is beyond the mind and into which we seek to rise is superior to the running process of the thought, superior to the division of ideas. The divine is centered in itself. And when it throws out ideas and activities, does not divide itself or imprison itself in them, but holds them and their movement in its infinity. Undivided, its whole self is behind each idea and each movement, and at the same time, behind all of them together. Held by it, each spontaneously works itself out, not through a separate act of will, but by the general force of consciousness behind it. If to us there seems to be a concentration of divine will and knowledge in each, it is a multiple and equal and not an exclusive concentration. The reality of it is rather a free and spontaneous working in a self-gathered unity and infinity. The soul, which has risen to the divine samadhi, participates in the measure of its attainment in this reversed condition of things. The true condition for that which is the reverse of our mentality is the truth. It is for this reason that, as is said in the ancient books, the man who has arrived at self-possession attains spontaneously, without the need of concentration in thought and effort, the knowledge or the result which the idea or the will in him moves out to embrace. To arrive then at this settled divine status must be the object of our concentration. The first step in concentration must be always to accustom the discursive mind to a settled, unwavering pursuit of a single course of concentrated thought on a single subject, and this it must do undistracted by all lures and alien calls on its attention. Such concentration is common enough in our ordinary life, but it becomes more difficult when we have to do it inwardly, without any outward object or action on which to keep the mind. Yet, this inward concentration is what the seeker of knowledge must effect. In the elementary stages of internal debate and judgment, vitarka and vikara, for the correction of false ideas and arrival at the intellectual truth. Nor must it be merely the consecutive thought of the intellectual thinker, whose only object is to conceive and intellectually link together his conceptions. It is not, except perhaps at first, a process of reasoning that is wanted so much as a dwelling, so far as possible, on the fruitful essence of the idea, which, by the insistence of the soul's will upon it, must yield up all the facets of its truth. Thus, if it be the divine love that is the subject of concentration, it is on the essence of the idea of God as love that the mind should concentrate in such a way that the various manifestation of the divine love should arise luminously, not only to the thought, but in the heart and being and vision of the sadhaka. The thought may come first, and the experience afterwards. But equally, the experience may come first and the knowledge arise out of the experience. Afterwards, the thing attained has to be dwelt on and more held till it becomes a constant experience and finally the dharma or law of the being. This is the process of concentrated meditation. But a more strenuous method is the fixing of the whole mind in concentration on the essence of the idea only, so as to reach not the thought knowledge or the psychological experience of the subject, but the very essence of the thing behind the idea. In this process, thought ceases and passes into the absorbed or static contemplation of the object, or by emerging into it, in an inner samadhi. If this be the process followed, then subsequently the state into which we rise must still be called down to take possession of the lower being, to shed its light, power, and bliss on our ordinary consciousness. For otherwise, we may possess it, as many do, in the elevated condition or in the inward samadhi, but we shall lose our hold of it when we awake or descend into the contacts of the world. And this truncated possession is not the aim of an integral yoga. A third process is neither at first to concentrate in a strenuous meditation on the one subject, nor in a strenuous contemplation of the one object of thought vision, but first to still the mind altogether. This may be done by various ways. One is to stand back from the mental action altogether, not participating in, but simply watching it, until, tired of its unsanctioned leaping and running, it falls into an increasing and finally an absolute quiet. Another is to reject the thought suggestions, to cast them away from the mind whenever they come, and firmly hold to the peace of the being which really and always exists behind the trouble and riot of the mind. When this secret place is unveiled, a great calm settles on the being, and there comes usually with it the perception and experience of the all-pervading silent Brahman, everything else at first seeming to be mere form and eidolon. On the basis of this calm, everything else may be built up in the knowledge and experience no longer of the external phenomena of things, but of the deeper truth of the divine manifestation. Ordinarily, once this state is obtained, strenuous concentration will be found no longer necessary, a free concentration of will. Using thought merely for suggestion and the giving of light to the lower members will take its place. This will then insist on the physical being, the vital existence, the heart, and the mind remolding themselves in the forms of the divine which reveal themselves out of the silent Brahman by swifter or slower degrees, according to the previous preparation and purification of the members. They will be obliged, with more or less struggle, to obey the law of the will and its thought suggestion, so that eventually the knowledge of the divine takes possession of our consciousness on all its planes, and the image of the divine is formed in our human existence, even as it was done by the old Vedic sadhakas. For the integral yoga, this is the most direct and powerful discipline. End of chapter 4, Concentration, page 325.